Good morning, everyone. The title of my presentation is Enhancing Surveillance of Health Disparities in a State Public Health Agency Using Quality Improvement Processes. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. Here are the authors of the presentation. And we do, much of what I'm talking about today is based on a QI initiative that was done, and it has been published on the PHKIX website, which is a Public Health Quality Improvement Exchange website, and here's the link. Today, we're going to be talking about a number of different things. First, I want to give you a brief background of what we've done over the last 7 years, since at least 2006, to really focus our efforts on the data infrastructure at the Connecticut Department of Public Health, with the ultimate goal of eliminating health disparities and achieving health equity in our state. This includes an assessment of DPH databases and how they align with a DPH sociodemographic data collection policy. And also, I will describe the plan we created to sustain quality improvement processes of a QI initiative that we conducted in 2012. And finally, what were the challenges and successes that we've had so far with sustaining this quality improvement project in a continuous quality improvement methodology. So like I said, there's been a focused effort within our agency since at least 2006 to look at how we are collecting and recording our sociodemographic data in our DPH databases. It started with the Health Disparities Project in 2006, which was a two-year effort to enhance the statewide infrastructure for documenting, reporting, and addressing the health disparities among racial and ethnic minority residents of our state. One of the main objectives of this project was to evaluate the collection of racial, ethnic, and other relevant sociodemographic information across all state DPH databases and make recommendations for improvements of those databases. So we want to ensure that data was collected on health and related social status, that it was accurate, standardized, and complete, because the outcome of having good quality data is being able to understand the needs of the population, draft effective public health policy, and really help to promote empowerment of our communities to address health related disparities. As part of the Health Disparities Project, in 2008, a policy on collecting sociodemographic data was put into place. And I have the policy here, if anybody's interested in looking at it afterwards. And you can also get it on our website. This policy sets standards on the collection of race, ethnicity, gender, and age, and other relevant sociodemographic data. The policy standards are based on federal standards set by the Office of Management and Budget in 1997. In the next few slides, I'll describe the issues pertaining to compliance of this policy and our databases. So in 2010, we set out to look at databases and how they comply. We identified 49 databases, and these are surveillance databases for the most part, that were not compliant with the DPH data collection policy. The data elements that we thought should be standardized. And we encouraged the staff and the data users, data managers, to upgrade or update those databases according to the policy by January 2012. Well, when we checked again in January 2012, only two out of those 49 that originally identified were now compliant, so only 4%, so very low compliance. So we knew this was still a problem. So the policy didn't seem to have, you know, the force behind it to really cause people to make improvements. So what we wanted to do then was to really, you know, try this QI initiative. So try a QI initiative that would look at this and try to make fixes to the databases. So we started a QI project in April 2012. It was just a short 8-month-long project that ended in November, and we wanted to really try to get compliance with this policy. So the first thing we did, we used the Plan, Do, Check Act, which several people have mentioned already, QI methodology, and we brainstormed why was there noncompliance with the policy and come up with solutions. We found that there were issues related to cost, so it's pretty expensive to make changes, especially when we're working with vendors who maintain our databases. There's limited staff time and resources. Of course, that's We see that theme throughout. There's complexity of compliance with the policy, the lack of buy-in among program staff and data managers as to really the importance of complying. Some people didn't even know about the policy, so these are data users, data managers, and we did a customer survey of those people and found that 30% did not know about the policy. And then there also there's no state regulations or mandates to cause people to be adherent. So in reality, it's a balancing act. I think the programs weigh the cost and resources needed to make the changes with versus adhering to the policy. So here's our QI team members. As you can see, they came from a bunch of different parts of our agency. So we had practitioner licensing. Our project sponsor, the main person really been working on this since 2006 is Margaret Hines, and I see her sitting in the audience over here. And then the people we had some IT. I'm from the Public Health Systems Improvement Office. And then we had vital records and a bunch of people involved. So it was great to have this team. I'd like to acknowledge our QI coach, which is Jack Moran, who's also sitting here. He's from the Public Health Foundation. And we received support for this project from the National Network of Public Health Institutes and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. So during this 8-month-long project, we mapped out the process to fix the databases. We chose which ones we thought we could make changes to, and we talked to the database owners and determined what was feasible as far as cost and time to make the changes. We also tracked the progress towards our project measures. So what we were able to do was that we were able to change or modify two major DPH databases and then four other databases that we thought were quick fixes. We either made changes to the paper reporting forms or the worksheets and the electronic databases or both. So in addition, an important outcome of this QI initiative was a list of recommendations or action items to sustain this initiative in the future. So it's these recommendations that I'd like to focus on for the rest of the presentation. So the team's recommendations to senior leadership to sustain our QI project was that we wanted to form a data quality committee, which would be comprised of members from many different sections throughout the agency to do an annual review of DPH databases and make modifications as needed. Second, we asked the senior leadership to support the passage of legislation, proposed legislation, to mandate certain data collection items on, and then also to get other state agencies involved in that, or to help support the change in DPH administrative regulations or our public health code to really get to collect certain data elements on the state-issued forms. Third, we recommended that our staff be trained on the policy. And finally, we wanted to ask for their support so that when programs are requesting funding for the programs, that they build in some money to do a general upgrade of the DPH databases. So those are some of the recommendations that we came up with. So now that's pretty much the background of what we've been doing over the past few years. And now it's been a multi-pronged approach. It's been the QI project, the Health Disparities Project, legislation. So you see, we want to see how we can implement those in the future from those recommendations. So it's a kind of like a system of continuous quality improvement. We're going to try different things, see how it works, and then try something else and see how it works, and hopefully continuously improve and learn along the way. So the first recommendation was to form a data quality committee. So the purpose of this committee is to review the remaining 41 databases that we originally identified as being non-compliant. We wanted to review new databases that are coming online and also be involved in the development of new databases so we can try to influence during the design phase of those databases so that they could incorporate the standard, the federal standards of the policy. And so we wanted to, in the Data Quality Committee, we'll be following a continuous QI methodology to support that work. So for instance, we're putting together some performance measures that will be tracked quarterly and annually just to kind of measure how the committee's doing. We're working on the committee's scope, which so what's in scope, what's out of scope for our work, and also we're developing an action plan, which is a project plan with assignments and potential completion dates. So there were challenges and continue to be challenges to establishing this data quality committee. Just, you know, it's a process to get a new committee up and running. Leadership was supportive, but there are many other work priorities, and, you know, we all work in a grant-driven environment, so we have grant deadlines and requirements that we need to be, you know, working on. So, you know, sometimes people see this as additional work. So we wanted to approach the committee members in a purposeful way, let them know about the importance of data quality and how its impact on health disparities, you know, if it is not a good quality data. So, you know, we wanted to really build those relationships with the committee members and then during the recruitment phase. And also helps to have very committed leaders and co-chairs of the committee, people that, you know, are champions of the cause and very well respected in our agency, and one of which is sitting here in the audience. Secondly, keeping the scope narrow will be a challenge. Sitting in a room with 14 different epidemiologists and data users, you know, everyone's got their issues, and so, you know, people are talking about, you know, lack of unique identifiers, lack of merging databases, you know, sharing data between programs. It's always been an issue, I think, you know, in any state agency. And we're trying to keep it narrow to just looking at how the DPH databases align with the data policy and trying to get that. I think that's a challenge. It was kind of hard work sitting there, you know, listening to everyone talk about their frustrations with data. And you're like, hey, well, let's try to keep this, you know, narrow. And we're just talking about how we're aligning with the policy. But, you know, maybe we'll get to those later, you know. But it was really interesting to see. And, you know, everyone was thinking and really excited, you know, when they were there and talking about data. So it was a good process. Finally, in educating the committee and getting them up to speed has been a challenge. So educating them everything we've done over the last few years and really so they understand the importance of what they're doing here in this committee. In general, we've seen a lot more buy-in to this effort on improving health equity and with our enhanced data infrastructure. In 2006, there were only two or three people who were making this happen, and now we have 15 people sitting in a room who want to take on this work. So the successes we've seen so far with the Data Quality Committee is that recruited members were honored to be asked to join. They let us know that there was an enthusiastic kickoff just a month ago. And so people, you know, again, were very enthusiastic. The committee already has discussed the need to update the data collection policy sooner rather than later, especially because now there's the Affordable Care Act Section 4302, which will require public health programs and anything that's federally funded, surveys, for instance, to follow certain guidelines or standards for data collection around race, ethnicity, primary language, and disability status. So we want to look into some of that as well. We started a team charter, which is a QI tool that really lays the groundwork for what the committee's scope and what everyone's roles and responsibilities are. And finally, we already set up quarterly meetings for 2014. So another success of this committee is just the breadth and depth of the committee. We have people from Office of Healthcare Access, Laboratory, Infectious Disease, Chronic Disease, IT, Vital Records, Cancer Programs. So we just have a wide array of people, environmental health as well, involved in this. So just wanted to discuss the challenges of making policy changes. So the second recommendation, like I talked about, was asking the supportive leadership to help us to propose the legislative proposals on state mandates around the data collection. So as you've seen, there are challenges with compliance to the so for instance, you know, we have internal policy challenges and external. So I'm going to talk about the internal first. So again, we have this policy. So we already talked about how there's no staff support, cost is an issue, competing work priorities. But there's also challenges with communication and education, just constantly communicating about the policy and educating about the policy. We need to keep doing this because of, you know, staff turnover, reorganization, things like that. So people, you know, so it stays on their radar that people need to be following this policy. And I want to just show you how Connecticut Department of Public Health has embraced the goal of health equity and eliminating health disparities in our state. And we've have tried to embed it in the culture at work. So here we have, in our mission statement for DPH, we have a sentence on promoting the equal enjoyment of highest attainable standard of health, which is a human right and priority of the state. So we have that embedded right into our mission statement, and it's one of our values as well, to foster policies and programs that promote fairness, social justice, equity, and cultural competence. So really, you know, it's in our culture now at DPH. And also in our strategic plan for 2013, one of the major goals is to champion health equity. So here's a screenshot of one of the pages of our strategic plan. So as I mentioned before, we've had challenges with internal, and now I'll talk a little bit about our external policy changes that we want to make. In 2012, there was a legislative proposal, again, to mandate that all state agencies conform to federal standards on race, ethnicity, gender, and age, and other relevant sociodemographic factors. So we wanted in disability status as well. So when it was first proposed, you send the proposal in, and then it goes through like several changes of hands, and then there's several opportunities to change the language along the way of the bill. Okay. And what happened was it changed so much that it wasn't unrecognizable. and, you know, Department of Labor couldn't support it, and DPH couldn't support it as well. And so we started the process again in 2013 and to submit the bill, but there was lack of support, and it lost momentum, so it never actually got submitted to the to the legislative process. So that was a little disappointing, but I think, you know, we're just going to keep moving forward and try again. And there's several reasons why there might have been a lack of support and why this legislation did not go through this year. You know, there's just so much going on internally with the staff. There might be some lack of support for the bill and resistance of other state agencies to be committed to this issue, because everyone kind of has to come together and push this through, because it is, we're asking that all state agencies that are human and social service agencies, you know, support this. So more groundwork needs to be done to do that. So there's still hope, I think. So one of the things that came out of that was during this process of looking into it for 2013, someone asked, you know, what's the accountability for compliance? You know, who's going to monitor the performance? You know, look at these databases and make sure they're compliant. Will fines be imposed if they're not compliant? So all these issues, you know, came up. What are the resources and funding needed to comply with the state mandates? So these are some of the things that, you know, we need to think about with regard to proposed legislation. It probably will be more doable and realistic to make a change to our administrative regulations or our public health code, because it's internal technical documents. You know, we know what needs to be changed. This is where we might mandate that, you know, we ask that certain data items be collected on state-issued forms. So that would be something I think that we'd have be more realistic to do. So the third recommendation that I'd like to highlight today is our data policy training project. And that was one of the things that we would like really to be involved in, to really get people communicating about the policy and educated on the policy and its impact on health disparities. So staff training of the module is important. We want it to be web-based and self-directed. We wanted to post it on our Connecticut Train Connecticut website for free and easy access of all employees. So we requested funding for this training project from the 2013 U.S. Preventive Health and Health Services Block Grant. So the challenges that we have, you know, see with this tool are that, you know, what is the best approach to rolling out this tool? Should it be for new and or existing employees? What's the level of employees we should be training? And then we were a little bumpy with the putting the new contract in place with our vendor, which is the Connecticut Rhode Island Public Health Training Center at Yale University. They're the ones that are developing the module. So we did get funding awarded to us from the block grant, so that was great. We have $50,000 to work with. We are using that vendor to develop the module, and we actually started developing that last month, and we're working on developing learning objectives for that. And it was it was decided that clerical staff should be the audience for this training. These are the data entry staff that are on the front lines, so it's important for them to really understand the policy. and why they're collecting the data that and recording the data that they are recording. And finally, I'd like to acknowledge our funders. We're supported by the NIFI grant. It was mentioned before by Dr. Nicola, as well as the QI Ward project. A program was for this 8-month-long project, and that was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the National Network of Public Health Institutes helped us with that, as well as the block grant that we received for the training module from the U.S. Preventive Health and Health Services block grant.